They need to get in to the group for whatever reason.
Thank you. All right, guys, we're going to start in 1 minute. Can all present their signatures, please? Right there. All right, right now it's 4:47 p.m. We shall start the meeting. Before we start, I'd like to introduce John Hannon. He's our new clerk. So welcome with a round of applause.
Thomas Ball. Dale Barbarian, Alex Chowdhury, Olivia Korn, Renee Cornell, Arun Devaha,
here,
Omar Dean,
here,
Osai Agarenko,
our president,
like,
Aris Hassan, Rebecca Harris, Matthew Indivine.
Yep.
Shishruta Irubanti. Gabriel Kaplan. Savannah Lin. Lee Lipschitz. Tristan McGuire. Debbie Diataro. Sarah Park. Grace Park. Marco Peralta Ochoa.
Here.
Samantha Rivera Zavala.
Here.
Christopher Schott. Evan Shapiro. Jaywon Sin. Dara Tokunbo. Myra Valdez. Ian Wallace.
Thank you. Welcome back, everyone. That was a long break. I hope you guys enjoyed the last time. Start off the semester, we actually have three new USA members joining us. So we have Debbie, Grace Park, and Shishura. Can you guys have a go to the oath of office? Just stand up. And if you want to repeat after me, stand up. Right hand. In view of the trust the current community has vested in me, as well as my personal sense of honor, I, and your name, do solemnly affirm on this, the 25th day of January, in the year 2018. To fulfill my responsibilities as a student elected representative. I will engage in open and honest debate in a process where I am guided by truth and fairness. I will never purposely misrepresent facts in an effort to achieve my goals. If a conflict of interest arises, I will relinquish my right to participate in the decision-making process. I will seek out and voice effectively the interests and concerns of the student body, address the issues of my fellow students, and strive to improve the quality of life at Cornell for all students. Thank you guys. Congratulations. And next we'll go into the microphone.
If there's any members of the community that would like to speak, please come forward. And with that, we will be closing out the microphone.
Okay, we'll be going into announcements and reports. The first on the list is.
So, Wall Street Journal, good to go. So, I hope everyone's excited for that. And one of the best parts about that, previously thought it was going to cost about 75 cents. It's actually about 35 cents, which is 100 plus. So, that's awesome. Jaywon and I have been working really hard on the website, so there's a few apps that I have for you right now for CornellSA.com. But I know that question is incomplete, but one of the things that you can do now, we've created a few forms to make your lives easier. So if you have any organizations that you're working with, or you know of any organizations that are looking for special projects funding, we've made it a lot more accessible. And so hopefully for the sponsorship request form, and essentially instead of going through the entire files and trying to figure it out for yourself, just answer your questions and you'll get it done. But if you have any suggestions on what you want on the website, feel free to write them.
Thank you. Next is Representative Schott.
I just wanted to give an update on some of the things that have been going on in the International Community Ground Campus. So, despite the previous derogatory remarks by the head of the current U.S. government administration, that include not only the heritage of this country, but his own, Cornell's actually making progress. Congress and those international students. So Arthur Pollock has green lighted the resolution passed for the break for the endowment of the emergency financial for international students. Those of you who are reminded right now, when with international students are not awarded financial aid on the mission plan, there is never again that's applied. So it's been a gap of updating access to VA by Cornell and also by the U.S. government. And so this endowment seeks to remedy that by creating a fund that seeks to those situations to actually drop on. Regarding the Office of Financial Aid, it would mean the Office of Financial Aid was next week. Right now, this obstacle is going to be a decade ago, which is actually getting as much money for this endowment as possible, so then we're assisting those efforts. Please be
talking. Thank you. We'll be going to presentations. We have a representative from CAPS here. Please represent you guys, close your laptops, pull your phones, and give them the information. You okay to stand up? Okay, address the up. Is it okay if I stand up?
Yeah.
Well, thank you for having me. My name is Greg Eels. I'm the director of CAPS and Central Health Services. I'm in my 15th year, so. I presented to the ESA a few times, but not for the event. Thank you for the honor of being here to present for about 10 minutes and hopefully have questions. So, to talk a little bit about CAPS, you know, our work is mostly initiative, being prepared for the education of the patient. A lot of people figure out what teams to be trying to get into that. One of the things that we've seen is actually, you see this data from the Pulse data, which shows 43% of students. Having some difficulty functioning depression anxiety, impacting their academic work. That's up from 41% to 5% that have dropped the hell in between those periods of time. And this actually tracks a lot of national data on increasing levels of stress among college age students. Another thing that you find is many times underrepresented minorities experience this distress or acute, oftentimes because of systemic discrimination, just public statements that you already referenced in the U.S. government and other places. You see this impact things proportional, both acutely, but not in America. So those are some of the things that we're going to be putting. One of the things we've seen over the last year is more people coming to us to help respond to some of these issues that are really related to social justice. These trends that increase, they're dramatic in terms of measures of emotional stress, what we've been reporting. And this is the increase that we're talking about. What we're seeing is on the last year, we had our phones for 15-minute brief assessment to kind of figure out how that's going to be. The demand for that's about 11%, and this last year, 20% over a 3-year. So that's a 20% increase. And we haven't had a concomitant increase in staffing, which is that more throws out in all the reasons. And we see more and more students coming with a history of mental health concerns. So we see over half the students we see have been individual therapy. About a third have been on some kind of medication. So folks are coming with an idea of what they want and what they would like to see in care. And our staffing models can't often meet that. You probably can't see all the numbers here, but this is the data that we track from early 1996 to present day. And the red bars represent CAPS FTE. So our current FTE is 32. And the blue line are the number of visits. At the top of my finger, I think you're about here. And you see this drastic increase. The times where the blue line gets more white space, acceleration of the red bars, or when students experience multiple ways. And they're more upset with their service, they're not getting as quickly as they'd like, they're not being seen as quickly. You can see the trend, we haven't got all of our visit data yet, but the trend line continues here, and where we're set for the spring semester is probably the biggest gap we've seen since 1996. So that's a little bit of where our staff is, how we're trying to do that. You know, we see 23% of students opt in brief assessment in which there are any one of those services. Which is up to 13% at FY6, which is a 12-year period. A pretty large increase. And that has corresponded to some extent with increased staffing, what you can see. Let me take a break and see if people have questions.
I was wondering, because it looks like you've increased the staffing a lot, which is really beneficial. However, at the same time, I'm very concerned about sort of the ability to get counseling in an immediate fashion.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if you're going to touch on that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, this graph represents that. And so what we, how we allocate our services, we do the first three functions, interacting with people. We also have programs like Let's Talk, with PD access. So you've heard of Let's Talk. We also look at shifting and doing more and more grouping. Those numbers are also going up. It's significant for previous years. So those are some ways in which we're shifting the clinical service. But that being said, we've done 20% increases in the number of people asking for PDM. That means either they can wait a longer amount of period of time to see the apps, or they can take a referral to the community immediately from that poster. And one of the things we do at that poster is ask people what it is they want. Some people are saying, you know, I want PD therapy every Tuesday at 3 a year. And we'll say, well, that's one of my people. That point means that here's the referral options. We do referral management to our nurses, we follow up. Some of these goals, we keep track of what's available. So that's basically how we're managing.
And you said that was a focus group, sorry?
I'm sorry?
Or did you say that was a focus group? Or?
No, it's just a description of how we manage the flow.
Okay.
Next in the speakers, this is Becca.
So this should go more like years, and you need to know, like, throughout the school year, there are certain times when you have high funds who's coming to you or at certain events on campus specifically, and having them on that all of a sudden.
Well, one of the main ways, like I said, is we have to refer more people. We add more groups where we're looking at trying to direct people to technological supports before they get into care. And one of the ways we think about our care is kind of a step in the model. With the Let's Talk, lower cost, lower impact, all the way up to counseling, medication management, 5% three-second, 2 second medications. We were providing some longer term care and medication to those folks, and then allocating all the way. And we have busy. One of the things we do is, the CAP says we have 4 12-month appointments, so we increase this one, are the only 12-month staff. So one of the ways to hire more people where it's going to fall is to hire people with 11 month contracts, which is almost 100% of the stuff going on. Did that answer your question?
Sam?
Thank you so
much
for coming. I have a couple questions. First is, how many of the percentage you said are 25, right?
25.
Okay.
We have some contact with them. It's not that includes this one. Make assessment.
How much of that has, like, any of those who long term?
Not many. And so, for example, if you were a student who could care, we might see the semester of therapy that's better, not stop. Or you might say, I want to continue to do your therapist degree, but maybe you want to do a referral so you transition that time. We try not to do much long term therapy. One of the difficulties is with medication, so we provide psychiatry services as part of the counseling service. It's not a department on its own, it's like CAS. So we're only doing medication for people who need counseling. So we'll sometimes say, I was your therapist, I'd be your therapist in grad, and I'm not seeing you very often, you're be seeing you in psychiatry because you're staying on medication. So we carry more people like that, and that kind of longer term way, but we still try to minimize the use of individual care. And then we refer people out for medication and counseling. The challenges of availability of psychiatry.
Well, good on that. What do you define as long term?
Well, that's a good question. So, I would define long term by being more than. If you look at some of the research in psychotherapy, most people get most of the benefit of individual psychotherapy
systems. Okay. And my understanding is to get into the service, obviously, you could not help.
Yeah, I mean, you can schedule that first home screen of your
program.
Okay. And you go through the patient's program.
Do you have statistics? Because I've done it myself. I have some thoughts about the personal thoughts about the
Well, I don't have that data in front of me, but there's actually, when we looked at that, this was 14 years ago, when we started the budget system, and lowered the number of people not showing up for a full hour. So before we did the 15 minute phone screens, we would have to wait longer to do a full hour. It's much less now. I don't think those numbers are really high.
And then my last question is, I guess. When you refer people to the different community providers, that is in and of itself a very strange process, which can have a lot of update already.
Sure.
Can you maybe walk us through how that process, how much burden you have on students already?
Yeah, so we sometimes get people, we'll get them a couple names, we'll say, check, last time we checked, people raised their hands and other things, follow up, we'll usually follow up, did you get connected? Students aren't connected, we will prioritize them in the back of our system. But as a student, you're not going to get a call, it's a magic.
Do you have like a list of things?
I'm sorry?
Insurance, like, because a lot of it is also the cost.
Right.
So, like, insurance cost and that kind of thing.
So, if you're on student health insurance, yes. But if you don't know, everybody who's still on the grant takes your songs. So, those will probably be out there. But if you're on here, and we're also linked to the student website. So, everybody who's on that website.
Before we get to the next question, for the new representatives, if you have any question, I want to raise your hand to the microphone. Next is Myra.
Yes, we do. So it's not an assessment, it's a phone screen we're talking about. So when we developed the system, the main goal was to give us some ability to figure out how to do it. So, and to some extent, it's based on the clinician's expertise on what this person can do. So if you follow and you get a little bit of experience in the cause of suicide, you can get to the same thing. One of the things the systems allow us to do is that clinician figure out who's a very expensive. Where before, it was like, someone's married, but they didn't. But they actually may not be able to raise it on their list. Somebody hears the people call, but actually thinks about killing themselves every day as a method. Why not get into a week? So this allows us to get that person to stabilize the person and look up and figure out what's working on them. And then they can match that to them. So that's part of that process. Now, the referral numbers have gone up probably four or five hundred people. All because of that. So if you call right now, you'll get it more quickly because at the beginning of the semester, when our intakes and our grants are available. As we get busier, that time stretches out on the weight and more likely we will get it. And then, as that line, like I said, as this gets, that line gets further separated from the red bar, the more likely that referral that's going to happen, the more people will have to be done. Because that bar is a finite, it's a finite resource, finite lifestyle.
Marco?
I have a couple of questions. So I guess my first question is how you guys work specifically towards students of color, specifically Black students who you know are like higher, need more attention, I guess you could say, and how, especially, I guess, like how you guys work towards that specific issue.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, so one of the things that we do is really work hard to have as diverse a staff as possible, to have our staff look as much like a student. if we're still trying to kind of match it in those dimensions, is it great? Because you don't always know how somebody's going to connect. But it is very important to have a staff that looks like the people that you're serving, because it conveys a message about that. But also, the development of that software was intentionally go out and reach people who are less likely to connect, and cultural local barriers. And our data has shown that that has been more successful. As a first point of contact, it's less difficult than a grief assessment. It serves sometimes as a grief assessment, as the first step into the system. And it has been very effective at reaching. We also encourage our staff, if you want to do that, to do that, to provide support for them, take them out of the program schedule. So those are the things that have been the most effective. And then we also do a great deal of outreach to those communities in terms of presentations and conversations. So that really a three-pronged approach.
Thank you. And then another question is, have you guys heard about other similar organizations, like years or something, so that if, like, I know that there's somewhat of a stigma that, like, if a student needs, like, emergency off the tabs and cannot just get it, unfortunately, because of, like, such limited staff. So have you worked with any other type of similar organization, so that if a student, you know, like, has a breakdown, like, needs to talk to, like, immediately, they need to back their head, they need to know why they're going to get tabs if I can't see, so that they know that they can go somewhere else?
Yeah, I mean, we've been working for years. Our therapist actually in years training all the time. It's part of modules. I mean, we would still say we always see walk-ins, so I haven't talked about that. Our walk-in coaches are higher than 15%. So if someone was really breaking down, we would want them to walk in. We won't see them. We'll find them close to see them. Find someone to see them. They might have been there. So one of our biggest challenges, we're always balancing access and training. So if we're creating space for people to walk in and do, that does mean the therapist might have to see their client every other week, every 3 weeks. Is an access and treatment that both mutually exclusive ends of the continuum. But I would say that if you're really breaking down, you should be seen by your health officer, not a peer counselor. Here's this amazing peer counseling program. If someone's really experiencing acute stress, we would see the changes. And people do walk up quite a bit. I mean, a number of psych hospitalizations are common. So we are always managing those different cases to more critical care and balancing that.
We do have some more questions, but I think it's better if we...
You want me to kind of move forward a little bit? I was trying to see this move over 7 minutes. I think a lot of us, we've covered, I've talked about the grief assessment. Most of you know it's been about, okay, I've talked about, let's talk some of our work on the community. We do a lot of it. We have a program called Community Mental Health Intervention. We have two mental health professionals who work with faculty and staff, and they're concerned about a student, but the student will walk in first, but they don't problem solve on their own services. So that's some of the work that we do out in the community. I talked about our staffing. We also have within our framework, the faculty staff assistance program. So that program also reports to me. So we have a comprehensive approach for the whole campus. So we're also doing work around mental health of faculty and staff on campus too. And beyond the clinical services, some of you've seen our comprehensive mental health deal. This includes work with the sports center, really looking at the academic environment, promoting social connection, increasing help-seeking, helping to lift up people in need of care, the mental health medical services, working together. Another thing that we do is provide some anecdotal consulting as part of primary care, because oftentimes international students may not seek mental health care but go to a physician or what ends up being a mental health reason. So we have a program for that. There are three people there, that included the CAPS team. They're clinically supervised by us, but reported to primary care. So that's another thing. They're doing their grief interventions. Also, disability services, they're part of Portal Health. They're also seeing this meteoric increase with the people coming in on patients. We do work around crisis management with the student's office. And then we've also worked to do major restriction around suicide. It's a big part of our efforts in 2010, 2011. So that kind of comprehensive approach is important to partner with people across the university. As one thing that's come up is this issue of external reviews. We've actually done quite a few of those through the Jed Foundation, through Active Minds, through AAAHC, which is the Ambulatory Health Accrediting Body. We've worked through the audit office, we've worked through consultation and through suicide, we've brought in experts on injury suicide. So we've, over time, had quite a few people what works out to about one every 60 or 80 months. All those big resources. And to some extent, every time you do something like that, you're pulling time away for providing your own local service. So we're always balancing those bigger community needs in open that sort of review with the time it takes to manage things. The biggest challenge is really matching our resources to what students expect. That's doing it in a timely way, doing it the frequency students want is frequent, but then also working with it. Comprehensive approach that I talked about, figuring out this resource that people talk about, the funding model we were just talking about, funded through university application, student health and capitation for the student health insurance. So if you're on SHIP, they basically can give us some money to keep their costs down because it's cheaper than the students on the plan, but for us to provide the care of that and the community, and then they'll go through that process. So we're balancing those three sources of funding. Student health is pretty low. $358 now, I think. $370, schools like Stanford, Harvard, $1,500, $1,600. So that's really a question for all of us. How much funding, how many student health, what would that buy? These are kind of questions for the student health advisory board, questions for the student assembly. And then the piece for us too is recruiting and retaining your staff. One of the things we work with been successful in hiring some of my own staff. The challenge is often going to have retention because you all know it's a pretty rural area. We are oftentimes paying people in the mid-market, so finding ways to retain them. We're also constrained by higher education environment where healthcare costs are at a different level. So we're oftentimes constrained in our ability to increase salaries at the level we need them to be to recruit and retain medical professionals, health professionals, where we're in the same experience as the rest of our interest. Another thing we're going to talk about mental health is I do like to just address the issue of student suicide. One of the things from a data perspective, Cornell is not a suicide school. It's got that reputation because of the completed suicides we've done. That's the difference. We look at a rating, across universities, and there's no such thing as a suicide here in the U.S. It's about 0.7 per 10,000 people. And you see clusters that occur. They occur in blocks of time that they will go years without. It's another issue with Cornell is because of the jump of deaths, people who get on leave and come back, students who died from the jump of death. We see this Cornell student who died from Pennsylvania, who have been affiliated with Cornell as they've kind of characterized the community. So I think that's an important way of thinking about it. Because there are definitely stressors, there are definitely things that make Cornell a different place. Suicide is a very complicated phenomenon. So that's one of the things that we work pretty hard. That's why we do the emergency walk-ins to get people to the hospital when they need to get to the hospital to provide psychiatric care when they need it. But again, the limitations occur because of the lack of resources. Those numbers are increasing in ways that really gone beyond what we see. And most of you remember our work with the city around the bridges. So that's going through the rest of the presentation quickly.
Is that TJ?
Thanks for being here.
Thanks, TJ.
So two quick questions. The first one being, are the lags, or I guess, is the inability to meet student for assistance, does that really come from a lack of funding and ability to hire new personnel, or the rationale of like caps never knows how many personnel will be needed in a particular year?
Yeah, I mean it's both. So if you go back to this graph, so if you look in here, we did have some of the university support us with new staff, 11, 12. And you saw when the suicides happened, that gap was getting larger. That led to some reduction. We didn't secure here when we saw this right here. These concerns weren't as local. There were all these issues about getting people in. But when the red line was over, when the red bar was over the blue line, we didn't hear this. You see the trend now. Yeah, the question is, where's the blue line going? And then how high do you want the blue line? And the closer you get the red line to the blue line, the less you get the
blue line. Sure. So I guess the answer is more so you don't know how to predict.
We don't know how to predict. And you know, you can look at this and say, well, if this continues, it's going to go here. So you might want your FTE to be 36. You don't know for sure. But you can look at that graph and eyeball it and say, that's why I have two more answers. Yeah.
And then the second question is, has CAPS ever considered or looked into bringing any of the professionals in the community on campus on a contracted basis?
Well, we actually did that once here. There are real challenges with stability of insurance and supervision. You bring them on. So if we bring them on, how responsible am I as the captain? Do I supervise them quickly while they're licensed by the United States? If they engaged in some malpractice, let's say you brought some, how would you screen those folks? So we stopped doing it for those reasons. You know, what if you had somebody who engages in really unethical behavior? Did we not screen them well? We didn't hire them for a contract. For us, it made more sense to just hire people, train them, and understand what's going on. And one of the things we've done is actually people we've worked with now wanted to go to private practice. So we know a lot of people we've actually worked with. Been easier to just refer to them. Yeah. So those are some of the reasons why we went away from it in the past. I would just say, if you want better care, it makes more sense to hire people full time because they're going to know things about them.
Don't you run into some of the same liability issues when you're recommending these generals to professionals?
No, because New York State license. We're referring to them, right? It's not our job to determine whether they're okay, they're private practitioners. It's their own liability. It's New York State's job to determine whether they're licensed professional practice.
But CAPS does recommend certain questions.
Well, I mean, we have referral lists, so we can't target or not. I mean, we have to kind of be equitable.
Okay.
We look at that and try to match people based on what their concerns are, who might be a good fit with them, what we know.
Thanks.
Next is Dale.
Okay, so this is going to sound confusing, but you mentioned the Student Health Advisory Board.
Yes.
And then in my notes, I have something on the Student Health Fee Advisory Committee and the Student Health Plan Advisory Committee. In October, I attended a meeting of the Student Health Benefits Advisory Committee. Are these four?
It's supposed to be the same thing.
So all four things are the same?
I think so, yes.
Okay, so that brings me to my second question. The meeting I was told at the last minute, I think, was open to the public more or less, and it seemed that the committee did not have any form of standing membership concerning student members. And I'm wondering if that's the plan for that to continue, because it seems like it was more of a last-minute meeting called members of our own health and wellness committee were summoned to the meeting, and we were given a lot of information about the health fee and then told to bring information back, which was very nice, but it seemed that the committee itself did not have standing student members.
It's supposed to have standing student members. I mean, that's not my area of expertise, or I'm not running that committee, but I know the folks at Cornell Health do. What they told me is the goal is to get student engagement, regular student engagement, so if that's not happening, the folks at Cornell Health will be glad to talk to them and say something.
And who is running that committee? So
Chris Payne, who is one of our directors of administrative services.
Chris Payne.
Chris Payne.
Yes.
Yeah.
Next is Olivia.
Thank you for coming. I have two quick questions. So the first question is, I wasn't really aware that there were often appointments that a lot of students on campus are aware that there are walk-in appointments.
They're not walk-in appointments, they're walk-ins. So if somebody walks in, we will assess them.
Way that you could sort of spend a little more on marketing for that, because there are a lot of students who don't think are very aware of that and could definitely.
Well, I mean, it's all the website. I mean, I think one of the challenges for us in the health service is we market what we can deliver. And it says if it's an urgent emergency situation, walking. And so, you know, one of the things that would happen is I would be back, if we advertise the form of what we want to, there would be longer waits. Or people call that, or longer rates individual therapy. So we're always balancing that. So I think we're sometimes reluctant to market that as this is the first way. And we'd like people to schedule the brief assessment quickly. We try to get those available for 24 hours. So it allows us to manage that. flow. Anything walk-ins is not efficient. If you've ever been to an emergency room, you might be waiting 12 hours. We can't let people do that, and it's just not an efficient way to allocate resources. So partly why we intentionally don't market it more is because we want to encourage people, unless it's an emergency, to do it quickly.
Okay, and then that's another question. So I really understand why the 15-minute assessment is in place to sort of talk to people. But I've also heard from a bunch of people who need help relatively quickly that it is sort of another obstacle to getting to a therapist and stuff like that. So do you guys, I know some people are a little bit terminated perhaps because they don't want to go through the 15-minute process that you want to talk to somebody. So do you guys have any statistics on people who sort of don't get seen quickly enough, people who want to go through that process and they don't, and then want to have them further issues down the road or that they
Yeah, there's no way, of collecting it. I mean, the Let's Talk program is meant to supplement that, you know, where people can drop in and kind of figure that out. We do market Let's Talk, by the way. We market that one. And that's a separate service for separate reasons. For us, that's a more structured drop in general hours. We try to help supplement some of those things. And you're right, I mean, to some extent, the brief assessment was about it. Slowing the process down, helping the rest of the people who are allocated.
Chris?
I also had two questions. One is just a clarifying question. Because you said you have interventionist psychologists and psychologists, but basically you are in touch with physicians and care, especially with international students. And then it also grew from the international business, let's say you have dedicated. Professionals for international student service and be clear about the situation.
Well, so what I was referencing is we have a behavioral health consulting program, which are two psychologists and one social worker. And they work within primary care, so they're not including the CAP statistics, but we supervise them. And they do it. Anybody who sees somebody in primary care, either screening or mental health or whatever, anything comes up, a behavioral health consultant will meet with them. Talk about next steps. We'll sometimes refer them to CAPS for more ongoing care, sometimes we do interventions. So that's a program that sees a large number of international students because there are oftentimes cultural reasons people don't have family, this is psychologists. So outreach, you know, Let's Talk program, ISSO, some of those things where there are connections between our CAPS therapist and international programs. And we try to hire and work with different groups.
That's great. I actually have one more question because we're trying to set up an international resource center where we need to discuss with the administration. It's having like set hours where a capture presenter could just be on site and do it in the resource space, like a 1 or 2 times a week, set what we could do that. Would that be just feasible?
Yes. Yes. I mean, it's feasible with the resources. If we fit into our existing Let's Talk program, we frequently have to say, if we get requests from, if you have a Let's Talk site here, Let's Talk this pretty regularly, and the only way to respond to that is to get staff. But as that finite resource stays stable, it's pretty hard to do new things. And then we've gotten support from Martha Bryan this last spring and fall. We hired 5 people for 4 open positions, and they said we could go up an additional position because we have 2 candidates for a position who are really strong first candidates. So they have supported those increases. They've also supported this increase in our programs to 11 months versus staff because we're a more of programs in the summer, kind of healthy in the summer. So those are some things that we've done, but again, it's not, those are 3-4% increases, not 11-20%.
This is Debbie.
Hi, thank you for coming. My first question is, what data on the demographic of students that seek CAPS care versus like the general population? So we are like screening classes and services?
Yeah, so we tend to see graduate students who do access CAPS larger than the proportion of students. We also see the majority of our students who are programs like this. Even that for Latino and African American students made it more likely representation of the student body. International students are lower. That's one of the least sheltered groups that are going to seek more traditional
ones. All right. And my second question is, you also have data on the biggest barrier to seeking care, like what the students report as a reason why they care and like the other programs to supplement that?
Yeah, I mean, so the biggest goal is weight changes. That's not part of those things. Intentional design to help someone. We are looking at adding more groups to this. Shift into a more group focused model first, away from some individual therapy, because you can see more people in the best. So those are the two ways we're trying to supplement that. The biggest concern is just the care that takes time. We were talking earlier, you're staying in private practice, so I want the health plan. I have to go through more of those things. Nobody's going to refer me to somebody. I've got a call, I've got a video, I've got a call for a family. So,
next is Ian.
Thank you. Could you talk about how external reviews were conducted and what some of the conclusions were?
Sure. So I'll go back. We'll start in 2010. That was looking at the programs we had to re-election earlier, looking at our clinical programs, how we were assessing the genes. That was specifically in response to the academic year we had six suicide. And that looked at a lot of our programs, looked at our clinical services. And the out-type reviewers were veteran trained, how we do, and financial services and all that. So they looked at clinical programs, and they were both still online at that time. Interview people, talk to people. One of their main conclusions was around suicide prevention. We were missing this means restriction effort. So that's the first thing. The Jet Campus Seal Award is, we do have their website, Jet Program. So, you know, we've had history with Jet for 2013 present. We does the Jet Clinton Program and the Clinton Foundation, political reasons. Now it's just the Jet Campus Program, but they have some protocols that they outline, things they're measuring, so they chose not to do the actual is we were saying, well, we know we failed, we're not doing a good job, and we need to do an external review, but they're not saying about what standards we're looking at. It's partly why we're going to project our mission, as they say. We're looking at these things, and we're looking at the education, looking at these kind of clinical services, doing some outreach. So you can look at their website and see the things. So those are the two generals. The Cornell audit looked at some broader things, and mostly focused on things we knew, which was and then we needed to build it. We had it been kind of approved at the time. Mostly the programs and all that wasn't the main focus. We also do AAHC, which is the credit body, looking at, are you providing clinical services based on national standards? Do you have an adequate staff? So, like I said, in 3 years. And then in the Active Minds Health and Campus Award, similar, but submitting things online, trying to program, I interviewed this.
Next is Grace.
Hello, I have two questions. So, the next question is, you mentioned earlier that some students might prefer therapists that might look like that, or they might prefer a different gender. So there should be some therapists that are more in demand than others. And if there is, therapist is more in demand, that there should be longer time to wait because he or she might be more comfortable. So how do you distribute that? Is there anything that you do in your system where you distribute?
Well, in the grief assessment system allows us to do that. It was designed as to respond to what you just said. What we can say, well, it's in the same. I want to see a female. That's easier than asking about 80% of the staff. So let's say you want to see male therapist, then you would wait longer. Or we could say you can see first available 2 weeks, or you can wait for exactly what you want, 6 weeks. See that American therapist. three academic therapists in the next 1 month, 4 weeks. Next available might be Asian American female therapists. So you know, that varies. It varies on cancellations. The brief assessment system allows us to be more efficient. It is a little bit of a barrier front. As part of that, we basically give you the choice. You could wait and work from exactly what you want. Of course,
the second speaker is Sam.
I have a question about if you have outsourcing the work. So maybe do like tele Skype share?
Well, I mean, so one of the things, telehealth or teletherapy often works when people can't get very involved physically. So, you know, that's, pick somebody to still do that out. It's a psychologist or social worker. It's still going to cost a fair amount. So, and if you outsource it, somebody can get a non care here, for resources here. So, it doesn't necessarily save your resources. The only time you outsource something, what you're saving on is basically also your benefits, because you often help talks have to pay the same salary because it's a company that should give the same company. So, I mean, those are things that you can look at. They tell us about well research, pretty effective, but it's still a cost to pay the psychiatrist's time and not like the system. It's not a panacea. I mean, university could outsource the whole health service. When you outsource, your care goes down, usually because they hire people with less, lower degrees or less So, and that's always an option. We're actually outsourcing our hospitals for those reasons, because we figure we can, we're still open 6 days a week. We can pick up the slack. We can basically have to manage these things. And one of the main reasons is our staff is just getting laid out for 50 hours a week and then doing nights and weekends. So we've outsourced what that is. So, those reasons.
Okay. And going off of that, do you have any suggestions about how we can help you, like campaign funding and where we can put the pressure?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things we continue to do with the leaders, trustee wise, continue to help. If the health fee isn't relative to the universities, it's not knowledge. It is a profit. Two every week of, what do you mean, my student? I just went away, I paid $70,000 of tuition. Well, the tuition doesn't go to the tuition because the buildings, the world-class faculty, the roof facilities, the health care, those guys. So those are very different things, the funding. So just helping that story and to say, you know, we are all responsible for what kind of public care we want to provide, how are we going to do that, and what are we going to pay for? So helping us have that conversation and continue to put pressure on folks who make those decisions about that. I mean, the pressure on my end, he's supportive of this, it's just a matter of balancing. But folks are going to listen to you more than they'll listen to me. Yeah, I would love to have more resources. It's not like, I mean, it's painful and difficult for us to have to pay and provide that. And yet, this is the reality that everyone can be
thankful for. Thank
you. Next is Verna.
So I just want to piggyback off of the questions that Dale was asking about the student health advisory board. I was wondering what sort of like student input goes directly towards CAPS in particular, not necessarily towards the health fee or any other issue regarding mental health, but CAPS in particular, and whether you'd be open to more discussion in the future.
Yeah, I would be open to more discussion. I can come back here as many times as you want me to.
Lastly, Marco.
What happens if a student?
So we do have, you can waive the cocaine. We have a process that you could just say.
And like that will be what they mean by
Yeah. Okay. So brief assessment is free, walk-in sessions are free as you get into But if, and also we have a program where if you're in a head for cancer, you can't go into that. So there's real mechanisms for that. Students might be in there.
And another question, are you able to have any, or are you collecting stats of like people who are more likely affected because of other minorities that they belong to, like gender, sexuality, things like that? Because I know like a lot of times what we're going to do is like, and I guess like how you guys are taking steps to like, you know, if someone can come and they would be comfortable with somebody who usually talks with students that are community
or things like that, yeah. Like a person who has worked with first-generation students, because the hospital is space, are often much more specific than, you know, like black or white, you know, Hispanic, or Yeah, I mean, I think we try to balance that, having people with different specialties with the things we were talking about, those are things that we're frequently looking at. We have staff who are it's community walk up Puerto Rico to talk about our services. So we do a fair amount of that also. That's just one example. Transgender care team that looks at some of those issues, that's another example. So it looks at the overall policies around being welcome. Have people look at all the messages on the TVs that come out there. Are these representative of people from different groups that they can make messages that they walk up? So there are a lot of different ways we can look at that. People who have specializations. But again, everybody is also a generalist commission.
Right. Thank you. Yeah. All right,
thank you
so much for
the presentation. Thank you.
You just did it.
I move to amend the agenda and allow for a 2-minute reading period followed by approval of the meeting minutes from November 2nd, November 9th, November 30th, December 1st.
Yeah, we'll go right into that. All those in favor of approving the minutes?
Thank you.
All chat.
Make sure that there's nothing egregious in these.
Yes.
Well, I noticed that some of the, like, where it's this table, some of it is spelled wrong.
Yeah.
Like, 2, 3, in the pink.
Yes.
Is this for the November 9th?
Which section and letters?
I move to have the office check the vote on the convocation committee and fix the minutes after they've been passed by the assembly.
All right.
Yeah, by unanimous consent, we'll look it up.
This was Gina, right? And that motion will be on the November 9th meeting.
All right, so what was your motion? What, you'll approve? Yes. So regardless, we do have very serious mistakes on the books. So I'm not sure if we should approve this at this meeting. Wait, so Gina, so we found a discrepancy in the meeting minutes. Can you check for us for the November 9th meeting? On the second page of the minutes, it says under bio reports, under convocation, it says that convocation was tabled to vote of 14021, but right underneath for Willow Street City Union Board, it says that it was tabled with a vote of 23022. So we thought that the difference in the number of votes was very significant. Could you help us check the records for that? So there's been a motion table.
It's just a type of motion, so 24. Yeah.
So there's been a motion table.
Second.
All those in favor?
Question, are we just tabling these?
Wait, from what was your motion? Is it for this minute specifically? Or? Okay, so this is.
I'm happy to take a look, but I think I probably just to verify that I have to go back and listen to the audio. If it looks like it's a simple typo, which it sounds like it is, then I would just amend it right now. But if there's concern that it's not more than that, then I request a table so we can make sure.
Okay. So you would join a motion? Okay. All right, so there's been a motion to amend. The 14-24, essentially. All right. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor? Okay. Clear majority. Passes. Okay, so can we have a motion to approve the
meeting? Second.
State your dissent.
The minutes for November 16th. Or 19th.
November 16th? Yeah, so as Becca says, we can't pass the current meeting of the current minutes. Alright, so there's been a motion to approve all the minutes that we currently have. Is there a second? All those in favor? Raise your hand and placards up very high. All those against? Chris, is that an against? Okay, abstentions? By 25, 0-1, it passes. Okay, we're gonna go to business of the day now, resolution 17. Sponsors take the table up front. So just as a context, resolution 17 was on our last meeting last semester. The SA voted to give exec the authority to approve or to not approve resolution 17, but then from the audio didn't get it, so we have to vote on it again.
So yeah, this should be relatively easy to pass. It was already passed by the assembly to give the authority of the executive committee to pass it. This was mainly Jesse's resolution, but I helped him on it. It's a sense of the body, so the audience can vote, and it's not actually asking the university to do anything, but pledge their support for the NYSCRE, AREB,
Okay. So there's a question. I'm gonna have one next. Yeah. So
when you say get involved with the NYSERD, what exactly does that entail? Does that involve donating money or anything?
No, there's a professor who has already submitted a proposal, and we're just asking the university to pledge their support behind that professor.
Good question. Okay, next is Sarah. All right, TJ.
You know that she actually submitted a proposal?
I do not know that.
Because the proposal is due in 4 days. So, I don't know if she's. I don't know.
This was meant to have been passed last semester.
Yeah.
I would not be opposed to the assembly not voting on this, but I think it can't work. Vote, which is a sense of body, and it's pledging our support on the professor who's proposing with the energy project. There's no reason that passing is a bad thing, even if also has to.
Are there any other questions?
Second.
Okay, there's a motion to approve. There's a second. All those in favor? All those against? Abstentions? And community members get a vote, right?
Yes, so you take a poll of all the community members in the audience and then divide that between yeses and noes.
Yes.
Two votes for yes.
Two. Okay, so community members, all those in favor? Especially you guys?
Yeah.
So there's one in favor. Thank you, vote. All right, so all those against? Abstentions?
Yeah.
Okay, so by vote of 2-2-0-2-1, it passed. So, I mean, so the community
can also take two votes.
Yeah, two votes in favor of approving the resolution. So, right now we have 26-0-2, it passes. Thank you. We have exhausted the agenda. Yeah, so but the senior seats we have executive session. For new members, for new representatives, Dale, who's our VP of Between Operations, chairs the executive session. Can members, can people who are not or BSA please leave the room? Thank you for coming.
No, seriously, guys, we should pack up the binders now. You're not going to want to do this after. Fine, we're moving in. Okay, we're going to be using the microphones.